It's true. Across the globe, women aren't as prosperous as men. Gender inequality is a pressing moral issue, but we forget it has massive economic implications. If you were to put all of the women who don't have access to formal financial services in one place, they would make up the third largest country in the world. That means an entire population without bank accounts, credit cards, or other tools you and I likely benefit from daily. Prosperity for women starts with inclusive policies, products, and people around the globe, and the investment to make it happen. Welcome to the Making Finance Work for Women podcast. My name is Sonia Kelly, and I lead Women's World Banking's proprietary research division. Join me as I speak with changemakers around the globe to deconstruct the social and economic exclusion women face. We'll discover new evidence together and drive action to accelerate women's economic empowerment. Because a leg up isn't a handout, it's a global game changer. Welcome, and thank you so much for tuning into the Making Finance Work for Women podcast, now streaming on YouTube and available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Sonia Kelly. If you're listening on YouTube, you'll be able to find additional insights and resources linked in the description of the video below. Before we get started, I'd like to give a special shout out to the sponsor of the Making Finance Work for Women podcast, which is Ernst & Young LLP. EY is a global leader working across assurance, consulting, law, strategy, tax, and transactions. EY teams ask better questions to find new answers for the complex issues facing our world today. You can visit their website at ey.com to explore their latest insights and services. Now let's jump into the show. Here's what we want to talk about today. Fintech has a gender diversity problem. In fact, it has, let's say, three separate but connected problems with gender diversity. First, there's the basic, commonly reported problem that far too women work in fintech companies. Second, there's the related problem that too few fintech companies have female founders or even female leaders. And third, there's a problem that women are underrepresented in the fintech user base. So a three-part problem. It starts to look like an industry founded for men, frankly, run by men, making products for men. So today, with the backdrop of Women's History Month, we'll be exploring how we got here and discuss whether progress is on the horizon and what that progress would look like. After all, fintech is all about disruption and innovation. At Women's World Banking, we've seen clear connections between women leaders and the customers they serve. From our vantage point, it's sort of a systems thinking topic, and I'm looking forward to diving in to get some perspectives from our guest. But first, let me go through the data. I always like giving a bit of an intro to the topic here that includes data that you can take with you and use in your work. So first, a recent study from BCG found that while women are nearly 50% of employees in the finance sector globally, women hold only a third of senior level positions, and only 13% of companies in finance more broadly have a woman CEO. There's insufficient commitment to diversity among leadership, absence of role models, and a lack of inclusion as the driving causes in this gap in women's leadership. When you look at the fintech industry specifically, women account for 19% of executives in fintech companies, 11% of board members, and 1.5% of founders. That is just stunning to me. The finance industry and the fintech industry are not exceptions in the broader financial ecosystem. We know that there are frighteningly similar gaps in central banks, in ministries of finance, in these like apex policymaking bodies. Again, less than half of women workers in those institutions are women, which is great, but only a third are in positions like economists or managers, according to the IMF. And only 11% of finance ministers or central bank governors are women, also according to the IMF. It's so interesting to me that almost the exact same lack of representation of women in finance is also reflected among policymakers. And I would guess that that's not not necessarily a coincidence, because these are people who are moving from policymaking to the private sector and back at sometimes, and it makes sense that they would have, you know, the same gender makeup. But here's what we know. More women in leadership means better outcomes for companies and for customers. Companies with greater gender diversity at the leadership and board levels tend to perform better financially than their less gender diverse counterparts. And financial institutions with greater gender diversity in their senior leadership create better products for women customers. And this is something that we've like seen data on. Like, this is not just Sonia making this up. Like, this is, there are studies about this and a lot of studies about this. I'd love to share a personal story now from an HR representative at one of the biggest banks in Nigeria. We talked to her as part of our research on advancing women leaders in the financial sector in that market. And she recalled a few years ago that one of her best women leaders in the institution went out on parental leave. And the day this woman leader was due to come back into the office, her childcare plans fell through. And she called our interview respondent, this HR representative, and she said, "I don't know what I'm going to do. My childcare fell through. Can I start tomorrow?" The HR representative, knowing this was the woman's biggest challenge and wanting to offer a show of support, said, "Nope, just bring your newborn in and I will take care of it." Out of this idea, the bank's creche or daycare center was established. And now in many of the largest banks in Nigeria, there is a daycare center right in the head office. I want to make sure that we understand here that even though my guest is a woman and I'm a woman, this is not just a woman's problem. In that same study in Nigeria, the women we talked about the importance of men in their groups or in their teams requesting flexibility in their work schedule, or taking time off for their families when there was a family change, taking parental leave and taking advantage of those benefits, so that it's not just women doing the work of asking for what they need, but male allies also taking those benefits and making sure that this is not a woman's problem solved by women, but a woman's problem solved by all of us. So I hope some of the things that I've shared resonate with you, or things that you can take away. But let's go ahead and introduce our guest. Adriana Enab has over 20 years of experience in capital markets, trading, and global product management. She previously served as the Director of Public Policy at Credit Suisse, and she actively shapes the future of technology and innovation in financial services. She leverages her extensive background on fixed income trading, customer relationship management, securitization. But why she's here today, even beyond these impressive credentials, she's here today because she's a dedicated advocate increasing women's representation in tech and banking, and promoting tech education in schools, job centers, among returners. She's actually received a number of awards, including the Women in Banking Returner of the Year, the Women in FinTech Power List, Standout 45. She enjoys engaging with diverse audiences, ranging from interns to graduates to primary and secondary school students, and she's actively shares her experiences as a woman who's returned to banking after 16 years to what is frankly a changed market, and she had a completely new role when she returned. So welcome, Adriana.
Shall I just touch on my background?
Yeah, maybe we can just pause and you can share a little bit about your origin story. Like, what are those big moments that brought you to where you are today?
I never wanted to go into finance. I wanted to be a lawyer. I was 17, got a summer job, ended up at J. Aron, then Goldman. They paid for my degrees, and I became a trader. I loved it. And I, that was in the 1980s. So there was women in the industry. It was limited. But I think because of that, we sort of got on with it. And there was no discussion about men or women in the industry. You just, if you were there, you were there. And then I ended up in London, and then Tokyo, Singapore, back in London. So in banking, then I took a 16-year break, because I at that point decided I had moved my husband around a lot. So we would, you know, I would let his job take precedence. So that was in Singapore. So in Singapore, I opened a couple of bars and had an event management company, did a few other things, and they had kids as well. Came back to the UK. So I'm American by birth, but British citizen as well. And I started looking to go back into work. And there was a headhunting company that was supposed to help women to get back into work that had been out for a while, but they weren't incredibly helpful. They just said, you know, well, I think, you know, you must have connections, use those. So it was a little bit of a sham. But Credit Suisse then came up with, they were one of the first to have this returns program. And I applied to that. I got two offers, took one of the jobs in 2014. So I'd been out 16 years. I was, remember, a fixed income trader. So capital markets all the way. And so they needed somebody in the policy team. And I said, absolutely not. I'm not doing this. I left. There were no regulations. It was 1998. And I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, nothing. So the woman that was there, and it's, you know, it's seeing that the potential that, you know, which can make a difference. She'd been at Goldman for a long time. I had been there for 9 years. We hadn't overlapped, but still she kind of knew the what it meant to have been at Goldman for 9 years in the 80s. She said, give me 3 months. That was 10 years ago. And I never looked back. And I started to pick up the digital topics. Now, you have to understand, and this is, I do a lot of talks for girls and for university students and for returners, that anything is possible. I mean, I was 50 and I was going into something completely new. I knew nothing about any of the digital topics. And I just started to read and to go to conferences and, you know, webinars and whatever I could and pick up on it. And I would see issues with something, or I'd see opportunities. And truthfully, because I'd been in the markets, for instance, I could see when ESMA, one of the you know, associations in Europe, when they mentioned something about blockchain, I realized how huge this was for our industry, how it could, you know, really shift the work that we do and make it much more streamlined and cheaper and safer. That if we'd had it in 2007, 2008, the financial crisis would never have been, you know, as the way that it was. And so I spent a lot of time just looking at that. And that was, like I said, because I knew the market side, looking at this saying, I know how this applies, this makes a difference. So just really, and then I started to spend a lot of time. So I went back, you know, like I said, after 16 years, I was one of the ones that was out the longest. And I think our COO at the time, David, said, I thought you girls were going to be input clerks. He goes, now I realize that you could take my job. And so we were the first ones ever to do this. So at first, you know, we had probably the toughest year because trying to prove to people that we weren't idiots. You know, and we tried to explain to them that not being in banking didn't mean that our brains atrophied. And actually that the ones of us that were home looking after children, we had learned how to negotiate with terrorists. So we had a whole new skill set that other people didn't have. So I then started spending a lot of time. I was surprised at the, if anyone asked me, that I felt that girls had actually regressed from when I had been there in the 80s. Because in the 80s, you didn't question it. You didn't think about it. You're a woman. You just got on with it. You did your job and, you know, that was it. It was a lot less PC then, but, you know, we grew up with that and we were okay with it at the time. But they had these visions of you must study this course in order to get into this. You must, you know, have this linear path. It was so exhausting what they felt they had to do in order to be in this world or to be happy in anything, that I thought, and a lot of people said to me, not everyone's like you. They, you know, don't have that ability to push or that ability to question things or that ability to walk away if something doesn't work. So I decided to spend time teaching that. And so, you know, whenever we have our interns, you know, I will talk to them. They come into Credit Suisse. I'll talk to them about policy to let them know also that you don't have to, or fintech, that that's not only coding, that there are so many jobs that you can do. And I think this is one of the problems is that the impression is that you must be really good at math, really good at science, you know, technology. You have to be a coder, that maybe you're going to be in a basement with no window. You know, they're going to throw some stuff down there and a few sandwiches once in a while. And that's just not the case. So they need to see real life cases. I'll stop in case you want to ask me something. Otherwise, I'll just keep going.
No. I wanted to pick up on something you said a few things you said in your journey. I heard like positive role models, mentorship, intentional programs that create space for women, and education. And I think those are four of the many ways that we promote or increase women in leadership. But so I think those are great examples. But to start off with those examples, I feel like maybe would give somebody listening to this who doesn't know anything about this topic a sense that, like, oh, we're going in the right direction. And look at Adriana's career. Like, she has just had this amazing career that is very representative of a woman in finance. So I just want to bring it back to the problem, which is like the lack of women in leadership. And OMFIF, for example, the think tank, predicts that we'll take 140 years to achieve gender parity in finance leadership. So your story is a bit of an exception. With the vantage point of your story, why do you think progress is so slow? Like, why are you an exception rather than representative?
So there's a few things that I want to go back to on the education part. This is something that I think, and not a lot of people talk about, is absolutely fundamental, and nothing is going to change until we do this. We must change the curriculum in this country and across other places. Kids should be learning STEM, boys and girls, since they're four. If we go to school here in reception, whatever. Language is super important. I get that. But maybe start that at six, because I can tell you my kids, I have some of my kids are bilingual. I am. But in this, always, but in this world, how we are not educating them from when their brains are so malleable in this, to me is beyond me. My two boys went to, one is in Germany, but the other two, very, very good secondary schools here. It was not given as a mandatory. It was an elective. It should be mandatory with math, with science, with anything else. I am sorry. Post-Brexit, we had a huge brain drain. A lot of the really good coders and everything else were Eastern European and from different countries. We then worked with in the Khalifa review, one of the things that we suggested was there had to be these, visas, special visas, which, apparently there are. I don't know how it's working or if that happens, but why are we not building? Why aren't we not starting now to look at what we do for the future? If you start when you're four to do little Minecraft games, your brain starts to understand that. And even if you don't become a code or whatever else, in today's world, in the future world, you really need to understand how this works in order for you to have any business, in order for you to understand how the world works. So it makes me crazy that we haven't changed it. I don't think it's a very difficult ask. Now, some of the things that I do is I've become and I trained to become a UK STEM ambassador. So I go into schools and I went to the Institute for Science, in Albemarle, and they had a whole AI day of, 200 students from sort of, state-run schools on AI and on cybersecurity. So I do whatever I can. I talk at assemblies to try and explain to them, to show them some of the things that you could do. I'm not a good scientist at all, but some of the things that you could do having these, and also just the importance of it. I've got a little bit of a bugbear, and I talked to somebody about this last night, that they've now made it STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Why? I'm sorry, it's STEM. The art is great, and no one is disputing that. Art is absolutely great, and I have a lot of friends that are artists, but that belongs in a different bucket. Please don't start diluting this mathematics, science, technology, engineering bucket, because it's already diluted enough. And I think that if you start it young enough, this becomes part of a girl's DNA, and we will not having these discussions later. Mm. I think that primary education is incredibly important for so many reasons.
But then you also talked about like women who are currently in the industry, and I'm really struck by in the banking industry that there are like 50 women have 50% of jobs, but only a third of leadership positions. Like, what happens when somebody first comes into a company? And like, what is that bias? Is that lack of opportunity? Is that lack of ambition?
I mean, I guess,
like, what is it?
Well, I think there's the other thing. I just hold that one second. I wanted to go back to the role models.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I have a different, and it's not a very popular, but it is mine, perspective. And I think it's helped me. Girls will always ask me when I go to do these talks. So, you know, I did a lot of things at Credit Suisse for our interns, our recruits, our, you know, whatever we had, you know, new people coming in. I never, you know, they're like, you didn't have any role models. What did you do? And I said, I didn't ever need a role model because, you know, a role model, you then have to think of, they went to this school and they did this and they did this and they did this. And then you start thinking, if I don't do exactly the way that they did it, then I'm a failure. Then that didn't work. Now I understand, you know, it's great to see women in, but I mean, to me, it didn't make any difference if there were women or there weren't women there. I just did what I did. And I pick different bits of valuable gold nuggets from a lot of people. So I listen to a lot of different people. I read a lot of this. So for instance, Steve Bartlett, I was ready, you know, listening to him when he was interviewing Bear Grylls on the way in to talk to these girls about the imposter syndrome, which I suffer from. And this is another thing that it's incredibly important.
That's hard to believe, honestly.
I know, but this is why it's so important to, and this is why what we need more of is women like me that will then spend time, and maybe the banks make it a thing that you have to do that, you know, as part of your, I don't know, end of year review, that you go in and you talk to different groups and you explain to them your vulnerabilities, your concerns, your fear. You know, I did a podcast with the Women Returners group a while ago, which is Fear is Totally Normal. You know, the Zoom hover about, I'm about to say something, but God, I don't know if it's right. And I did this a few weeks ago, and I asked a question, and no one said anything. And I thought, well, that was a stupid question, obviously. And then when I got off, I got all these messages on LinkedIn and emails. And they're like, thank God you asked that question because we thought the same thing. So I've always said, there hasn't been a single time when I actually have gone, pushed myself. If I knew I shouldn't, or I was going to ask a question just to talk, don't do that. But if you're like, I think this is right, let me try. Always try. Always do that. Always push. Don't hover. But yes, it happens to me. And I think it's important because what happens is the younger girls or the, you know, the ones starting out and looking at moving up, you know, scaling up, they're afraid that these things are insurmountable and they are not, which is why I spend a lot of time talking about it so that, you know, my path was not linear. I took opportunities where they came. I moved to countries. You know, sometimes I took two steps back in order to get to where I wanted in the future. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. The role model bit for me, I get, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, I know a lot of people believe that they need that, but I also don't want the people that don't understand that. Like if someone had said that to me when I was 17, I would have thought, well, I'm going to be waiting a really long time. And what are you going to wait for? So take bits and pieces of information that makes you this, your own little sort of, you know, person you carry on your shoulder, who's your guardian. That's your role model of, but that's made up of a lot of pieces. And there are things that institutions should do. When I first went back in the Real Returns program, they did one of these personality tests. Fantastic. You know, quadrants. You will not be surprised to hear that I was in the sort of, you know, this the circle that I was like right at the edge of the top right one, which was, you know, extroverted and big picture and, you know, loyal though, you know, all this kind of stuff. That was great. And then I remember my boss at the time who had hired me, I would go in on a Monday morning and it's like, hey, how are you? What's going on? How was your weekend? And she would say, what do you want? And I would walk out. Now this is I'm a grown woman who had a huge career in banking and made a lot of money at Goldman Trading and had three children, lived all over the world. And I was like, oh gosh, she doesn't like me. I mean, I don't know, you know what it is. Then we did this follow-up course, which is showing you how you deal with people in other quadrants. And it's kind of that five languages of love, right? And it's like, just because they act that way, that has nothing to do with you. This is how they are. And you need to then know how to deal with people that are not in your quadrant. And that will help a lot to move forward to, because I think that a lot of times women bash themselves because they don't think they're good enough because of their own demons, because of our own demons, which no one is helping them by saying, everybody has those demons. This is how you deal with them. I think, and I talk about this a lot, that a lot of times women put the glass ceiling there. because if you are good and you want something, then you ask for it and you go after it. And like I said, I wanted to trade. My boss told me you'll never trade without an MBA. So I was like, okay, I got an MBA. So, you know, you need to do that. And you need to believe in yourself and in the ability to do things. And if you don't like it, then leave, you know, obviously depending on your circumstances, whatever it is. But we need to stop being victims and you know, pushing for what we want, but learning things like that. You know, I would watch on YouTube, things like the way you walk into a room, the way that you sit makes a huge difference. How you look at people, the fact that people love to talk about themselves, you know, let them speak. So I did this one thing, Women in Finance and Imperial. I've done a lot of things for us, you know, just mentoring girls and explaining to them. These are some very simple things that give you confidence, but also 80%, I think they say, of what, you know, when you're presenting, of what it's your, how you say it, how you present it, and not what you're saying. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, the delivery, not the content. Yeah. And now a word from our sponsor. EY applauds Women's World Banking's 45-year legacy empowering women through financial inclusion. Together, we have a common vision to build a better financial services industry, one that is stronger, fairer, and more sustainable. Find out more on EY.com. Oh my gosh, I can't believe how quickly time is passing. I would love to prioritize a couple questions that I have that are on slightly different topics, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
One is VC funding. There's just such a huge gender gap in venture capital funding. And I would guess it's contributing to a lack of women founders because there's just like not the resources for them to fund or for them to create viable companies. Is that something that you've thought about or an area you've engaged with? And do you have any thoughts about that gap?
I mean, I think that it is, if I'm going to be honest, fear from men, maybe. This is just my own possible interpretation that you know, they're going to have kids, they're going to be distracted, somebody gets sick, you know, this, that, and the other. I don't know that you'll ever get anybody to say that, but I think that do we invest and, you know, are they fully committed to it? But I also think that if there were more women who had a really solid tech engineering background, that it would be, they would feel more confident to go in and then they would get that money. I think that it's, but I have to tell you something that I read yesterday, which I was horrified by. I don't know if you see it. It was on LinkedIn, and this is Sophie Winwood, she's partner, CEO of WVC, an operating partner at Fox Capital, something. This gentleman, Hussein Kaji from Hoxton Street, on an interview on Sifted, said a few things that she then lost it on, which is the cost to train someone, a woman, is a huge tax. There aren't many females in VC, so you know he didn't know what he was talking about. There were, you know, close to none. Most unqualified, don't have years experience in VC, building a business, or heaps of board experience. Women need too much training and mentoring. not a good investment bet. Those were some of the things. And I mean, she went crazy. And I'm not, you know, saying, and maybe it was taken out of context, whatever else, but and she then went through, he'd invested in three things and one was doing really bad. When I think one of the other ones was Deliveroo, but that kind of mentality, you know, a young guy too, it's like, I don't understand. You know, I doubt that you've had board positions, but is there this, are we being held to a higher standard than anyone else? You know, do we have to have more years experience than men do? Because, you know, obviously men are really good at maths and very good at, you know, and women really don't know how to balance a budget or understand any of this, which is why a few years ago at Credit Suisse, we had our Women in Banking Day, which is for all of our clients, you know, senior clients. And they asked me to put together a panel on for technology, and it was all women, because I wanted them to see what women in technology looked like. So it was Karen Croxon from the FCA, head economist, Diana Paradis from Suede, you know, who's this amazing company that, you know, I keep bringing to Credit Suisse to do business with. Wendy Jepson, who sold to NASDAQ, Anna Wallace from, you know, Shruti, just the most amazing people doing all these different things. But they're the minority, not really the majority, right? And I just wonder that we're being held to higher. And, you know, if you see funding rounds go to a centralized area where that's made, you know, where you have to hit certain criteria. And if you do, whether you're male or female, you know, then you get the funding, maybe something like that. I think one of the another issue that we're having right now is these bots that are checking CVs before they go in, because they're looking for very specific words. And, you know, so we need more training for CV writing or VC application. And I know a friend of mine was applying for something, and there was nowhere they felt they could go to get advice on how to do it to make it easy, to make it a viable. So there are certain words you have to use that the bot will pick up, right? Yeah. And others that it won't. So,
well, there was the Amazon example. Do you remember the Amazon example of the bot that Amazon used to sit alongside of HR representatives and look at resumes? And it was learning from the HR representatives. And the bot started systematically screening out women. Like, it saw a woman's name, and it would just take out the resume out of the pile. And Amazon was very public about this and said it was an experiment and it was sitting alongside humans and we've stopped it. And here's what we can learn about AI. This comes back to your point about representation of women's data. That's really critical.
Do we know why it was, what was it in the program that Amazon had written that had?
Well, it was a learning, it was a learning model. So it was like literally learning from what the humans were doing. And the humans were selectively taking out women because of, for example, gaps in their resume or things like that. And then the algorithm just makes it more efficient. So like the humans were doing it selectively and the algorithm said, oh, I can do this better, and started taking out all women because they're more likely.
Yeah, that's a little bit like the story of a gentleman that applied for a loan, got turned down, computer says no. And it was because he was taking money out of it. So every Friday night he'd go to his girlfriend's house. She lived next door to a casino. He would go to the bank next to the casino, get money. They thought he had a gambling problem, so they turned him down.
Wow. Oh,
so it's these things that need to be, and you know, when I was at Credit Suisse, we talked about this a lot with BCBS and also with the FCA on this explainability and on this, you know, and if you have more of an open source where there's a lot of information coming in, that should reduce the bias.
We have to wrap it up, and which I'm so sad about, because I feel like I've gotten a bit of a mentoring session from you and hearing about your experience. I guess my last question is, what advice would you have for a young woman entering the fintech space?
I would take as many classes as you can. Go to, you know, there's lots of webinars and things like that. Your LinkedIn is incredibly important. Someone will speak on a webinar. I'll connect with them after that. I will write, you know, I will type and, you know, I will send them a message and say, that was fantastic. You know, can we get together? Can we have a coffee? This was really interesting. You know, get out as much as possible. Don't think it's a linear path. Take opportunities. Sometimes it might not be exactly, I mean, I'm not saying take the first thing that comes along, but don't feel if there's something that's, this looks good, I could learn something from this. You know, you should learn something new every day. And I do. And everything I've done, everything, even the broking I learned, which was fantastic, which built, got me to where I am. But take opportunities that come along, you know, that, because you will learn from them. And it doesn't mean that you won't get to where you want to go. You may get to where you wanted to go, and you may find out that where you wanted to go is not where you actually want to go anymore. But do take those opportunities. Read a lot, dig into things. Don't, you know, like for me, a couple of years ago, I was like, oh, quantum, what is that? And people are like, oh, why are you bothering with quantum? No, I need to understand, even if it's not directly related to what I'm doing, it's incredibly important for the whole ecosystem. So then when you're sitting someplace and somebody mentions it and you can actually start talking about it, that also helps, and that will help you to become somebody that is a more trusted person to potentially invest in, you know, in funding. And so, you know, the network is incredibly important, but you have to have some substance within what you're discussing. But it, you know, the path isn't linear, and that is, I think, really incredibly important. Do not put the glass ceiling there. Don't worry about having days that you feel like you're terrible at everything, because we all do. Men are different from women, and whatever Mars, you know, women, Mars, Venus, all that stuff. It is true, and it isn't. You don't try and be a man. You're not a man. You know, you're a woman doing, and it doesn't have to be. Everybody always asks me, what's it like in a man's world? I've never considered a man's world a day in my life. But, you know, what you find is that then women will get very aggressive trying to act like a man. You aren't a man, acts like a woman, but that doesn't mean that you need to be a pushover. You know, those are completely different things, and you need to figure out what that, you know, what that difference is. But just learn, read as much as you can, meet as many people as you can, and take opportunities.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Don't put that glass ceiling there.
Okay.
It's not self-imposed.
A
lot of times it is self-imposed. Don't you do it. Mm-hmm. Don't you do it. Yeah. You know, take it off and just say no. You know, this isn't, no, I'm not happy mm-hmm. with this.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Adriana.
Thank you, Sonia. Really, it was great. You. Thank you. Thank you.
I hope you found that as interesting as I did. So many topics that we covered. So exciting. Just two reflections I have. One, I think in the conversation, a lot of my notes are focused on agency, women's agency, and making sure that women know they have agency or can push back where they don't have agency. The other thing she mentioned was like bias and this question of, are women held to a different standard as men are? I wanted to share a quick story. Women's World Banking went into a financial institution and heard something that we've heard over and over again, which is that, oh, we don't hire more women, or we don't invest in more women because they leave. Like they have family obligations and they end up leaving. And so just is like just wasted money. And when we looked at their employee data, we actually found that women and men were leaving at about the same rate, but men's was attributed to going to another job, and women's was more likely to be attributed to taking time off for family reasons. And I just thought that was so interesting, because for the company, it's the same cost and it's the same benefit of investing in men and women, but there was just this assumption that that women were going to be leaving unfairly, and they were giving men the benefit of the doubt, just in their own bias. A couple things I want to leave you with. One, knowledge of today and tomorrow's technology innovations is critical for regulators to close the gender gap in financial inclusion. And that's not something that our conversation focused on, but that's something that Women's World Banking focuses on a great deal. No training program is available that equips regulators to make sure financial and regulatory technologies work for women while also investing in gender diverse talent. And Women's World Banking is setting out to change that at the end of April, when we're launching applications for the Women in Inclusive Tech Regulation Program. It's going to be for 30 women, all mid to senior level, who are going to be leaving this program with an unparalleled global network of women leaders, a firm understanding of technology innovations and trends, and increased personal capacity to influence change from their vantage point as regulators and policymakers. And this was something that our guest talked a little bit about with regards to the importance of networking and education. Also, if you found today's discussion valuable, don't forget to subscribe or rate or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We've only recently moved to all of the podcast platforms, so your feedback matters a great deal and helps us to bring you the content that resonates with you. So please stay engaged, stay informed, and I'm looking forward to connecting with you in our next episode on April 18th. Bye. See you then.